Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello. Welcome to the princes that were promised. It's Sean, it's John, and we are the Watchers on the Couch. We are still talking about Game of Thrones, the complete series, our rewatch, our thoughts, our opinions. If season 3 was the story of the demise of House Stark, then you'd have to say that season 4 is the story of the demise of House Lannister. And although House Lannister is still standing, still in a position of power,
right,
at the end of season
4.
They're
still able to stand on their feet.
They have imploded. It's interesting that we do get another cold open for season 4.
So this is probably the sickest cold open I think they had.
Yeah, I think so. Well, because you had the first cold open, which is the prologue of Game of Thrones.
I'll take it back, maybe the second one. But since...
Well, I mean, that was cool, but like, you don't know anything about it. That was literally just to introduce us to this world. The cold open for season 2 was alright. It's alright.
Season 2 had a cold open?
Didn't it? The White Walkers? Oh, I'm sorry.
It's season 3.
Season 3, yeah. Season 2 had no cold open. Season 3, cold open. It's alright. It wasn't anything great. But the season 4 cold open, it works so well because it tells you where everybody's at, particularly Tywin Lannister and his feud with Ned, which is very much a feud. Although the two never really,
sad because
it's sad because it's ice, and that was such an integral part of
the North, of Winterfell,
yeah,
of the Starks.
Right. It's this ancient Valyrian steel sword of House Stark. So it's the strongest steel in the known world. As far back as Starks go, I feel like ice has been there. And here it is finally coming into the hands of Tywin Lannister, and he melts it down for two different swords, which is the name of the first episode for season 4, is Two Swords.
Mm-hmm.
So the cold open is that. It's him, well, not him melting down ice, but blacksmith help melting down ice into two different swords.
And he puts it over the wolf's pelt in the fire also as a...
Right, just a little fuck you to Ned. Which is interesting because when we're first introduced to Tywin, he's flaying a stag, which he does to Robert. Tywin has systematically destroyed Robert Baratheon, and he beat Ned in a realm-wide civil war. Even though Ned wasn't part of it, he was fighting Ned loyalists. And he wins because he'll do the dishonorable thing, and Ned gets himself killed because he can't do a dishonorable thing. And there's the Tyrion Lannister quote, or it's the Tyrion Lannister chapter. Every once in a while, Tywin Lannister would hint at smiling. Paraphrasing. He doesn't quite smile, but there's that hint there of a smile because he knows that victory is his. So for Tywin Lannister, it seems that the rest, everything else from this point on, where he has ice and he's melted it down and it's now House Lannister's sword, not to mention even how much House Lannister has wanted their own Valyrian steel sword. Tywin's always been upset that lesser houses have had Valyrian steel swords and House Lannister hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
He's tried to buy Valyrian steel swords from these houses that could use Lannisters as a friend, broke, and could use the Lannister wealth, but they don't want to part ways with their family's sword. They'll do anything. They'll give a daughter, they'll sell whatever.
Take my five daughters.
Yeah, I can't give the sword. Take my five daughters. You can take my son. Not my sword. And now he finally has one, which can make it to two weapons. One for Joffrey, the new king of Westeros, and one for his son Jaime. That's how we're introduced to season 4. It's almost like a celebratory moment for Tywin. For him, the war is not quite over, but the fighting's over. Now
right.
It's time for making sure you make the right political decisions to shore up that alliance with the Tyrells and delegate people to defeat Stannis. He's the only rebel still out there, is Stannis Baratheon. And the Riverland loyalists to Robb, but they don't really pose much of a threat without Robb. So that's where we pick up season 4. And season 2 is known for the Battle of Blackwater. Season 3 is known for the Red Wedding. Season 4 has quite a few moments.
Like three.
Quite a few set pieces. Yeah, it really does. The Purple Wedding. Trial by Combat with the Mountain and
Viper.
The Red Viper of Dorne. we have the battle at the wall. I think it's made into a more cohesive battle than what's in the text. I don't know if I would call what's in the text even a straight battle as presented in the show, but that's okay. That's fine.
And also, the last episode, you have, yeah, Tywin dying. Tyrion goes away.
We have Tyrion's trial, which was another really good set piece. Leading up to the trial by combat, his escape.
What else happened in that final episode? I forgot. We Bran goes to see Bloodraven. We see
We see a different Bloodraven. Yeah. Kind of somehow changes in between
seasons.
This will be Bran's last appearance for a year. He takes a year off. Figure out his
get a haircut.
Yeah, to figure out his friggin' odd.
Yeah, well, this is the puberty season where he looks like a transvestite. Oh my god, dude, that hair is awful. Like, who decided you know that hairdo? Yeah.
He looked awful. Like, it took away from the story. I don't care if the actor's ugly or you know what I mean, especially if it's a kid, it doesn't matter. But like, he looked so bad that I think it warranted a recast. I think it did.
Should be recasted after season two, but that's...
Well, I mean, the only thing is, it's the start.
Let me just real quick. And then obviously in season six, he gets a haircut.
Yeah.
In season seven again, he gets a haircut. They made it like he's got like Bloodraven, like the Fear of Raven's haircut now.
Similarly. Okay, cool. Awesome.
Who was cutting his hair? Mira Reed, not only is Mira pulling him in snow, she's also giving him haircuts.
Yeah. She's like fucking pulled him for like hours straight. He's like, I'm gonna need a haircut tonight. She's like,
damn it.
I'm hungry too. I'm cold back here. My blanket fell off. Can you grab my blanket? Two Swords, the premiere for season 4.
When is season 4? Oh, season 4 ends with Arya going...
Right, this is the...
And we see the Hound versus Brienne.
Yeah, oh my god, the Hound versus Brienne was so awesome. And that is a...
Show only.
And I have to say, that may be one of the best...
Yeah,
the best show up to that point, as far as adapted material.
Yeah, Hardhome is actually probably...
Right, the
best show only thing.
But up to that point. Actually, I don't know. Like, I really like Hardhome, but that fight was... When we got to it, wasn't expected, and it made so much sense. It was so perfect. You know, I was wondering why they weren't following the Hound's story, where he gets attacked by it was the Tickler and some other guys in some kind of
inn,
and you know, they get out of it, but he's badly injured, and I was wondering why they didn't go that route, and it all made sense when you saw Brienne show up, and it was just so awesome. I loved it. I still think that's probably one of the better scenes of the series. Hardhome's awesome, it is. But I just feel like, as far as character narratives and those three characters involved, Podrick also, but we'll get to that. We'll get to all that stuff. So Two Swords is the premiere, directed actually by D.B. Weiss. These guys don't direct too much, but they have directed a few episodes here and there. Written by the boys, written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Like I said, we start with the cold open Tywin, reforging ice into two different swords, one for Jaime. He gives this to Jaime. This is after Jaime's already back, so he gives this to Jaime as a carrot. You know, the stick and carrot? This is like a carrot to get him to learn how to fight with his other hand. Whereas in the books, he's made it before Jaime even gets back, so he doesn't know about Jaime's hand yet. Prince Oberyn Martell arrives in King's Landing on behalf of his brother, Prince Doran of Dorne, who Tyrion, when acting hand, had originally invited to King's Landing to sit on the small council. He invited Prince Doran. Prince Doran sends his brother, who was not all there. How do you take something like that? You invite the leader of your house. You send a crazy fucking brother who's quite dangerous.
Wants to kill everyone. Yeah. Named Lannister.
Right.
I love that. I love the opening scene, you know, where Oberyn's there, the two Lannister cronies. And they're thinking like, oh, who's this? And Oberyn, he's just like so cool. No, I know what likes to last there. I remember he said. All of a sudden, like they're trying to go after the longsword in a close combat. All of a sudden, he's got that little dagger.
Yeah.
Never go for a longsword in short combat. It was just such a sick way of introducing him. And then they have that awesome scene with Oberyn and Tyrion, and Oberyn's going.
Season. The first episode?
Yeah. And he's like...
He says that he's here for revenge against the... Lannisters for raping Elia.
Yeah, and he's killing Elia. The last time I was in the capital was for another wedding. My sister, the Princess Elia Martell.
Yeah.
And the last dragon, I got Targaryen. Till he ran off with another woman. And when I heard that, I'm like,
right, because that was one of the first hints towards, you know, the Rhaegar, Lyanna actually being loved and, and not kidnapped. And this is what I'm talking about with season four, is you can now get to this material, because going to season seven, we have a lot of characters out of the way. Going to season four, you have some main characters out of the way, where you have more room for this bigger mythology.
You have Robbie and Callan, they have the whole North out of there, so you really, they can focus on their love of the South.
Mm-hmm. So Oberyn tells Tyrion that he's there for revenge. And then we go up north.
Tell your father that I'm here. Tell him that the Lannisters aren't the only ones who pay their debts.
Oberyn Martell is wildly popular in the fandom for A Song of Ice and Fire. Not exactly the same character in Game of Thrones, but television character seems just as popular as the book character, if not more, because more people watch the television show. You have to give credit to Benioff and Weiss for the way that they adapted this character. Right off the bat, I'll say the negatives that I don't like about the character, and that is, and I don't think that Benioff and Weiss are good with the sexuality for any of their characters, because they feel like they need to show it. It may be an HBO thing. It might be an HBO thing. It may not even be a Benioff and Weiss thing. It may be an HBO saying, well,
we need more dicking.
George Martin hints that Renly is gay. When you read it, it's kind of obvious he's gay, but it's not in your face. But they put it in your face. Oberyn Martell, it's talked about that he's a bisexual. These guys, they put it in your face. It's like the way it's done is exploiting that characteristic almost to the point of being uncomfortable. That said, other than that, the character's so well adapted and becomes instantly popular. Within the first few episodes of Peter, he was one of the more popular television show characters. Granted, a lot of that may have to do with the hole that Rob left, the hole that Catelyn left, because a lot of people did like... I can't say that a whole lot of people like Catelyn Tully. But anyway, after we're introduced to Oberyn Martell, we're brought to the north. The Fens, who are different than their book counterparts. They meet up with Tormund, Ygritte, and the other wildlings, and they're kind of planning their attack on Castle Black. It takes quite some time for them to finally get to Castle Black. But Styr is introduced as like a new big bad guy, almost presented being on par with the Hound, or not quite the Mountain, but in that echelon of strength and evil. It's evil, no redeeming qualities. Jon is treated by Maester Aemon, because where we left him last season was he was full of arrows from Ygritte, but he made it back to Castle Black.
Right, and this is where he finds out that Rob died. And this is one of my biggest gripes in the show. Why do they always have to do stupid stuff like this? How Jon said how Rob was always better than him at everything. That's wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong. There was only one thing that Rob was better than Jon at. It was, what, bow?
Bow and arrow, yeah.
And that was it. Everything else, Jon was better. He was more talented than Rob. And that's what pissed off Catelyn even more, because Jon was more talented.
Right. I'm okay with it, just because I think they do it to add to Jon Snow's character, and not having the luxury of chapters and chapters to do this, it kind of makes it like... You even get the payoff now, as he becomes king of the North. After Rob was already king of the North, and Rob failed, Jon avenged the Red Wedding by killing Ramsay, and now he's king of the North, and he gets to do a better job than Rob did. That has more effect, I think, because Jon always thought that he wasn't as good as Rob at anything. In actuality, Jon was better than Rob at everything, because he's got the blood of the First Men and fucking Valyria. Of course he's better than Rob.
And Rhaegar was always known that, like, be very talented.
Yeah.
Like, he was never a great warrior, but if he put his mind to it...
Awesome warrior, yeah.
Whatever he put his mind to.
Jon tells Maester Aemon what he did during his time with the Wildlings to gain information. Arya and the Hound are in the Riverlands, and Arya is able to reclaim her sword Needle from Polyver. They kill him and his men, and this is at the inn, right? With the chickens?
I never got that. I hate those memes where...
It's like one of those things like Daenerys with Where Are My Dragons in season two. It's just like... Whatever.
I'm all out of shit. Like, all right, who cares?
I drink and I know things. In Essos, Daenerys leads her army on a march towards Meereen.
This is...
The last of the three great slave cities. And her dragons are becoming less tame as they grow.
And this is the episode where, hey, we're introduced to Dario Nahara's part duh.
Right. Dario Nahara's Redux. I like second Dario Nahara's better, by far. Because I like that actor. I really like that actor.
Yeah, at first it was just so like...
He's more like...
It was so obvious. You know, it was just so obvious that he was a different guy. Like, it wasn't even close. Yeah. Like, with the Tommins being, you know, like, you could
at least they got blonde hair, the kid grow, or whatever.
The Mountain, he's just a goon anyways. It's not that... But this is kind of like...
If you're going to switch styles like this, why can't you switch brands? Why can't you do new brands? Like, changing adults now? Okay.
I don't know. I just never... It never sat well with me.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it's not the same guy. Like, the other guy had long brown hair. Right. This guy's got, like, short black hair. Like, could they have done something there and dyed it, you know?
Right. Or the same outfit, maybe. You know, it's just different hair, facial hair, different outfit, completely different looking actor. I do think that the second Dario Naharos, Michael Newsmith, I forget the actor's name, but I think he's a better Dario. I think he's more like the Dario that they're adapting. The first Dario was like a himbo.
Right. Well, now this scene is the scene where Dario gives Danny the flowers that we talked about.
Right.
And the three flowers are kind of like dead giveaways.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing. Yeah.
Three heads of the dragon.
They weren't blue, right?
One of them was blue, one of them was the lady's lace, which is a white flower, white hair, fanny, white, you know, Valyrian style hair. The other one was the harpy's gold for lasher Tyrion. Gold, and it was in crimson color.
Tyrion or Jaime or Cersei? Most likely Tyrion.
I'm going to go most likely Tyrion.
Yeah.
And then the other one was the dusk rose, which was a blue rose, which is so obviously John. That it's Jon.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And that's the thing, it's so subtle. Those are the things that the show does that, like, ooh, okay, I like that. Yeah. Like, it's like you don't even realize it.
Dario also takes Strong Belos's place in the champion versus champion battle. That was a pretty good scene, too. That's the line and the rose. And I think the first thing you notice is different from season two, season three is this isn't really so much a catch up episode.
It's a catching up, but there's definitely a lot more stuff.
I think we already see the higher quality season four. Granted, it's just one episode. But I think the high point for me may have been the cold open. I love Charles Dance.
Mm-hmm.
And the low point of me would be the Oberyn, part of the Oberyn brothel scene. Because I think the beginning part negated the next part where the Lannister guards come in. Which I love that part, but the beginning part I didn't like it. It's just not necessary. So it hurts the episode. I'm going to go with an 8. 0.75.
Ooh, God, you're always harder than me.
I really like this one. I honestly think this, besides the Winter's Coming, I think this is the best first episode of a season.
Really?
Yeah, more so than season two or season three, for sure.
I'm going to go with an 8.25.
Okay, all right. Episode two, The Lion and the Rose, written. Final episode written by George R.R. Martin.
It's probably the final thing he's ever written.
Last thing he ever wrote anything with Westeros. Directed by Alex Graves. And Roose Bolton returns to the Dread Fort, where he is angry at Ramsay for mistreating Theon.
And this is where Theon's shaving him.
This is where Theon learns about Rob's death at the Red Wedding.
Is he still going to cut me straight?
And Ramsay tells him while he's shaved, like daring him to cut his throat. Yeah, to get some revenge. Because Ramsay really got off on that power. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough about whatever the actor's name is that plays Ramsay.
Ewan Ruin?
Yeah.
I don't like him.
I love him. I mean, he's not the book Ramsay, but we're not getting the book Ramsay. Book Ramsay's much more sadistic. Probably just as evil as TV show Ramsay, but the book Ramsay's more into head games, and he seems like he has more respect for his father, less daddy issues. Book Ramsay is scarier. TV show Ramsay, you know what he's going to do. I do like the TV show Ramsay. I think he was an amazing villain. Just being pure evil. He makes Joffrey look like a good guy.
Yeah.
In comparison, you know? The Boltons decide they're going to kill the remaining Stark children, Bran and Rickon, who threatened the legitimacy of Roose's new title as Warden of the North.
And this is where we find Locke comes into play.
Yes. Roose tasks Ramsay to reclaim the territories under Ironborn occupation. So it's still hinted that the Iron Islands have some control in the north, which is just really hard to believe. In Dragonstone, Melisandre orders several people to be burned as a tribute to the Lord of Light. This delights Queen Selyse. Sick fucker.
but it discussed Davos and Shireen. In King's Landing, Tyrion ends his relationship with Shae to protect her from his family and has her shipped off to Pentos, but we know she doesn't go. I didn't care for the scene, but just I'm glad that Shae was out of the picture.
Yeah, it's, I think it's right there. Just anything with Shae is really just Tyrion, tough to watch. This might be the low point of the episode for me because it's just
yeah.
I can't listen, stand.
Dinklage is a good actor. He can
nothing act, he can do to save her.
Nothing he can do to save no.
My little lion, you don't want me here anymore. Ugh. Strangle me, please.
Jaime begins training his left-handed swordplay with the help of Bronn.
Not Aelin Payne, as is.
No, not Aelin Payne, which makes sense.
Right.
It makes sense. It gives
Bronn's like the utility guy for the Lannisters.
Because at this point in Bronn Song is of Fire, Bronn kind of just, he's in the background. He's there. You hear him do some things that are like, Bronn.
He's like the utility guy, kind of like Jorah's now, like the utility guy, just bringing in different, you know.
Yeah.
We're just going to give you different characters that are in the books.
Let me ask you something. Do you think that the show would have been alright if Bronn went with Tyrion when Tyrion escaped King's Landing? Or do you prefer that Bronn has now befriended Jaime almost the same way that he was with Tyrion? I mean, you have Grey Worm, Barriss and Selmy.
But too much.
Too many fighters.
Yeah.
Over
in Dany's camp. It's actually cool days with Jaime.
Yeah.
Someone brought up a very interesting point about Bronn. He's doing all these missions with the Lannisters.
Right.
No matter what Bronn is,
he's a sellsword.
He's going to expect payment. Do you think he does something to House Lannister, then they don't pay up?
I think they're going to pay up. I just feel like Bronn, he's already gotten rewarded. Like, he's got a castle. I don't know if he has a castle in the show. He's got a castle in the books. He almost had a castle in the show, but Jaime promised him a bigger castle. They'll pay him. They need him. That is a good thought, but I just feel like 13 episodes left. I don't think they're going there. I think Bronn is a Lannister guy through and through. Does Bronn stick around to the end? No.
Yeah, I think he's going to be expendable. What could be his purpose?
Fighting a good fight.
Trying to fight a good fight, but he's just going to die. I can't just imagine.
Well, we'll
anyways,
see.
And there's a wasn't there a wedding in this episode also?
I think there was. Yeah. So the last third of the episode is, or last half of the episode, really, it was a big.
Let me ask you a question about this wedding. It's my only complaint about this wedding. Maybe you can correct it if I'm wrong, which I probably am. Wasn't the wedding like? Ceremony or like not the ceremony like the dinner the reception was that inside?
Yes.
Okay, so that I knew there was I always liked it better than inside. I don't know, being outside, I don't know, I liked it the way I read it as it was in this inside this great hall. You know, I don't know,
I like that
a slight complaint.
I'm okay with it.
I like the line with the meaning of Oberyn Illyrio Stan with Tywin Lannister and Cersei. And Orban's like, in my country, a lot of countries are different though now what they think that is perverse and wrong. Some feel killing and raping of young children. It's just for a time where it's just like,
you mean they're hinting at Ilira Sand and how she's a
How
she's base born and it's his it's not his wife, it's like concubine.
Right.
Well, not his because he's not married, but it's his it's basically like his longtime girlfriend and she's base born. So they're hinted at like, how does she have such a high station? And then he says, Dorne is not that big a deal, but, you know, raping and killing children, that is a big deal.
And then, you just, see, Tywin's like...
Nice. Yeah, he's like, all right.
Sky.
Yeah. All right, asshole. Get the mountain on you. But we do have Joffrey and Margaery Tyrell wed. The unification of House Tyrell and House Baratheon / Lannister. But it doesn't last long. Joffrey's extra big dickhead on his wedding day.
Especially the Tyrion.
He embarrasses Tyrion. He orders Tyrion to be his cupbearer. And he dies. He's poisoned. He chokes to death. Cersei accuses Tyrion of murdering him. Has him arrested. While the commotion is going on, Ser Dantos tells Sansa to follow him. And he'll get her away. Which is the same thing that happens in Storm of Swords. The death of Joffrey Baratheon.
I did not find it as good as it is in the books.
Okay.
I felt like the build-up... to him choking and...
anticlimactic. His whole death was anticlimactic.
Yeah.
It is in the books. It's definitely anticlimactic in the books because who's the bad guy if not Joffrey?
I just felt like the build-up, to no fault of the show, but it just probably played off better reading it than actually seeing it.
Well, because the way they describe how he dies, it sounds painful. When you look at it, his face is purple and...
Right. And what's so sick about the books, too, at that point in the books, where I think it was pretty much... there was six chapters in a row or something, whatever it was, where it was Tyrion, Sansa, Tyrion, Sansa, Tyrion, yeah, Sansa.
It was four, I believe.
Four.
It went back and forth, yeah. Picking up right where the other one left off. The entirety of Storm of Swords is unbelievably well written. That's why a lot of people point at that as the best of the series. It's the most happens, you know, the most surprises, the most shocks.
It's the Empire Strikes Back.
It is. It's the Empire Strikes Back of A Song of Ice and Fire. That's a good way to put it. But George has a way of writing Joffrey's humanity when he dies. So it is anticlimactic, but you just feel bad for him because you realize he's, and Tyrion makes note of it, if I'm not mistaken. I wouldn't even know how to paraphrase what he says, but something to the effect of, he's just a fucking kid. 14, 15 year old kid is choking, dying on the ground. It's my nephew. Horrible, horrible person. He's done horrible things. Fucked up in the head, but he's still just a kid and here he is dead. But that sympathy doesn't last very long because he's immediately arrested. And that's how...
You did this.
I mean, we knew what was happening. I never for once thought it would have the effect that the Red Wedding had. And most people I talked to that didn't know it was coming just thought it was kind of an anticlimactic fate for Joffrey. It was so soon after the Red Wedding.
You know, at that point, though, too, it's like, that's how he dies? Like, he couldn't got his head cut off. He could have been... Right. Like, he's got to die of poison.
All right, Rob wasn't going to kill him, but maybe Arya could kill him.
Someone.
Yeah. The Lion and the Rose. I think George Martin, this is a much better effort than his episode for season 3. I think the wedding itself, it wasn't as good as in the books, but they did make the effort. The performers dressing up as the sigils of each of the houses for each king. I thought that was pretty entertaining. The chatter among the guests at the wedding. It really did show the power that was at King's Landing now with this alliance between the West and the South. I'm going to give it a 9. The only scene I didn't like in this was the Shay Tyrion, but I'll take it because it's Shay's last scene for quite some time. Although not her best scene. Her best scene is going to be in a later episode.
I'm tough on this score right now. Let's see. 8.5.
8.5.
8.50.
What'd you give the first one? 8.25?
8.25.
All right. Okay. Alright, so an 8.5 from John for Lion and the Rose. A 9 from me for The Lion and the Rose. Episode 3 is Breaker of Chains, directed by Alex Graves, written by the boys, written by Benioff and Weiss. Tywin begins grooming Tommen to be the next king, and he enlists Oberyn Martell and Mace Tyrell to be fellow judges for the impending trial of Tyrion. Tyrion decides to pick Jaime as his witness. Littlefinger had hired Ser Dantos to smuggle Sansa out of King's Landing, or to bring Sansa to him so he could smuggle Sansa out of King's Landing. And he kills Ser Dantos as soon as Sansa's on board his ship. In the Riverlands, Arya and Sandor encounter a benevolent farmer and his daughter, who Sandor robs to Arya's disgust. In Dragonstone, Davos tries to figure out how to replenish Stannis' depleted forces and requests a loan from the Iron Bank of Braavos to pay for a group of mercenaries called the Golden Company. And I feel this is the only time the Golden Company is really referenced in Game of Thrones. In the north, Sam, fearing for Gilly's safety, has her and her baby move out of Castle Black to Molestown. Meanwhile, the wildlings made up of Tormund and Ygritte and Styr continue to raid northern villages. The Night's Watch receive word that a band of Night's Watch mutineers have set up camp at Craster's Keep. Jon tells the Watch to organize a party to attack the mutineers, as they cannot risk having any information about the weakness of Castle Black's defenses leak to Mance Raider's approaching army. And Daenerys lays siege to Meereen.
Is this the episode where Jon and his men go off, like where he meets Locke, or is that the next
episode? He meets Locke here, and Locke...
That has another ironic line in there. Locke says...
This is where they're at the
courtyard,
the hall of Castle Black, and
yeah.
Locke volunteers for this mission.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you, a bastard or something like that?
Locke says this, yeah.
Yeah. You know, my father was nobleborn, my mother, not so much. That's what Jon says. And I'm thinking... Yeah, your father was a freaking prince.
Yeah, he's crown prince of the realm, actually. And your mother was noble lady of the north. Breaker Chains, I wouldn't quite say it's a holding pattern episode. I mean, we do get some stuff that happens, but some of these storylines that are beginning are, I don't want to say they're dead ends, but Davos going to the Bank of Braavos.
Dead end.
Filling time, for sure. Sam fearing for Gilly's safety. All right. I guess you could call it character development. It's not as bad as the stuff that was going on in the previous two seasons. I like the Littlefinger stuff in this episode. Rescuing Sansa, killing Ser Dantos. Saving Sansa, so is he a good guy? But then he kills Ser Dantos, so you know he's not. Walking both lines. I like Tywin tearing Tommen from Cersei's grasp and not allowing Tommen to be affected by or influenced by Cersei. He's not going to let Tommen become
Joffrey. Version 2.0.
And I think we get some really good acting from Lena Headey, as always, but especially in this episode.
Like on my record or like my score.
Is this the episode where Jaime and Cersei have sex under Joffrey's?
Yes.
It is, right?
Yes.
Now that was a...
Show only.
Yeah, it's a show only. Well, no, it's not. It is, but it's not. The timeline of it is, it happened in the books when Jaime gets back, when he first gets back to King's Landing, he finds Cersei. Because you remember in the books, he wasn't there when Joffrey died. Right, he wasn't at that wedding. And he gets back and he finds Cersei in the Sept mourning Joffrey, and he takes her there. And it's the same kind of thing where she's saying no, 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 but then she eventually has sex with him. And the controversy here was a lot of people were calling it rape. I didn't see what the controversy was. It's a story. There's a lot of over-sexualization on the show. That's not one of it. You know, that's character development is what that is. Other than that, not much happens. After the high of the last episode, kind of a breather episode, I guess. And it's okay. But I'm going to go 7.5. My high point being Tywin taking hold of Tommen, and my low point being the Sam and Gilly stuff. Even though I like both those performers, I think they have good chemistry together, but it wasn't here that they had good chemistry.
I'm going to give it a 6.75.
All right.
Trump some scores here. Wow.
So you didn't like this episode?
No, I did. I just think that...
You didn't hate it, but there was nothing...
Really, there wasn't anything I really like, wow, that was an awesome scene. There was nothing in this... Like, if there was an awesome scene in this, I mean, that makes it a 7.25 or something. Anything in this episode that was like...
There's nothing memorable about it. Right. There's nothing... Right, okay. All right, fair enough. I'm into that. That's cool. Episode 4, Oathkeeper. Daenerys successfully captures Meereen amidst a slave revolt and immediately seeks justice for the slain slave children by nailing 163 masters to posts at sea. Littlefinger admits to Sansa that he was involved in Joffrey's death. So the mystery of that doesn't linger for very long.
Right.
King's Landing, Olenna, who is planning to leave, also implies to Margaery that she was involved in the poisoning and convinces her to seduce Tommen before Cersei has a chance to turn him against her. Jaime meets with Tyrion and is convinced of his innocence, but Cersei is adamant about Tyrion's guilt and orders Jaime to hunt down and kill Sansa. Jaime instead tasks Brienne with finding and protecting her, giving her both his Valyrian sword and Podrick as her squire. In the north, in an effort to get rid of Jon, Alistair Thorne and Janice Slint conspire to allow Jon to lead an expedition against the mutineers who have captured Bran's party and forced him to reveal his identity.
I hated how they used the term the mutineers. Yeah. I thought they could have came up with some...
Well, this isn't a book thing. This is just a holding pattern thing.
So I know. They wanted to slow some of the stuff, like to make it interesting, you know, mid-season thing with Jon and...
Yeah. It worked out pretty good.
Right.
It was good for Jon's character, but what are you, on a boat?
The mutineers. Yeah. We're gonna get the mutineers.
Yeah. The traitors, yeah, the mutineers. And then we get the scene with the White Walker taking Chris's last newborn son to a secret ritual site where he's transformed into a walker. And this is where, in the credits, you got the Night King. So people thought that was a big spoiler.
Right. Now, is this the episode where we see the mutineers?
Still not this episode.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, it's just Janice Slint and Alistair Thorne decide to send John, hoping to get rid of him. Yeah, it plays out differently. They send John to parlay with Mance Rayder with instructions to kill him as his punishment, knowing that he'll die. Instead of going that route, they do this thing with the mutineers. Right. I'm okay with it. I'm fine with it. It's more action. It makes things go quicker. But you just know that this storyline is not going to go anywhere. Even with Bran there, I know you knew that Jon and Bran weren't going to meet up. It was just like a tease for people that didn't read.
And I'm just thinking of Bran. Yeah. Jon!
Yeah.
Jon!
Oh my. Jon would be like, who the fuck are you? Who's this lady that looks like my brother? Who's this disabled lady? Some disabled lesbian that looks like my brother. I like the Daenerys stuff posting the mask.
And that was the scene with, again, they took the line out, one sentence out, you know, Rhaegar fought nobly, you know, this is when Barristan's walking down, like, saying, you don't have to do this, you know, when the people fought for your brother, they fought for him because they loved him. They wanted to fight for him.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to show... Right.
Power. It wasn't about intimidation and power.
And then Jorah's there, like,
it's about inspiration.
Rhaegar fought honorably, nobly, and Rhaegar
died.
And Barristan's like,
wait, he said that this episode? Didn't he say that last season? It'd be fun if he like said that like every episode. And somehow he said
it might have been season 3. You know, it might have been season 3. Yeah. I'm,
you know what? Then he goes to different freaking cities. It's the same freaking shit.
But that's basically
it's what the Danny, same freaking shit.
That's why Danny is not as popular as she once was, because she's just doing the same thing over and over
again. Same thing. That's where I was season 3, so I take that back.
It'd be funnier.
Now, it'd be funnier. I was going to give that a 7.5 and then drop it down.
About that quote. Yeah. Honestly, nothing that I loved in this episode, but again, nothing that I hated. I already had that at the episode before, so I'm not ready to call it a holding pattern. Narrative is moving along, but it's quite boring. I'm going to go 7.
Can we agree?
All right. So you liked it better than Breaker of Chains.
Yes. Again, that gave that extra quarter point with the Night's King. That right. Wow moment. Something, that's right. Something. Ooh, that's okay. Interesting.
Cool. First of His Name, directed by Michelle MacLaren, written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Tommen is crowned king. Cersei meets with Marjorie, Tywin, and Oberyn, hoping to sway them to her advantage in the coming trial against Tyrion. In the Vale, Littlefinger takes Sansa to the Eyrie, where she is to pose as his niece. Oh, so I guess it is in the Eyrie. She poses as his niece. He's pressured to marry Lysa Arryn the same day, and it is revealed that the pair killed Jon Arryn while framing the Lannisters. She overheard that, right? They didn't volunteer that information. Sansa overheard that? Or no, Sansa doesn't even find out about that. It's just revealed to us as the viewer that they... on the King's Road, the Hound catches Arya practicing her water dancing and angers her by mocking that fighting style and mocking Cyril Pharrell. Brienne finds out that Podrick has no practical skills as a squire, but she is impressed with the fact that he killed the King's Guard in order to protect Tyrion. Jon's group attacks the mutineers. Locke attempts to kidnap Bran in the confusion, but is killed by Hodor, who is actually Bran.
I gotta go back on this now a little bit. Episode 4 was the episode where they were at Crash's Keep and they're talking, and the next, you know, like, you know, she killed that beast. And then you realize that Rhaz is making funny. His,
ghost, right?
Yeah,
that's right. Ghost. That's right. That's episode 4.
That's episode 4. Okay. So now episode 5 is when... Ghost! They have my brother's direwolf!
Yeah. Ghost is like, who's
why that? Why is he locked up?
Ghost is like, who's that lady that looks a little bit like Bran? Who's that really ugly lady that looks a little bit like Bran?
Someone stole Summer. What's cool in there, I think we talked that last week, or whenever, a couple weeks ago, when we did talk about Jojen and his visions and all that, you want to call it, and he did say to Tanner, or whatever his name is.
Carl.
Carl Tanner?
Carl.
Oh my god, what's his?
I think it might be Carl Tanner.
I don't think it's Carl. It sounds too. Yeah. Sounds too like Full House-ish.
Yeah.
You know, I see you getting buried by, I see you dying by the snows tonight or something. It's really Jon Snow.
You sure it wasn't Locke? Because Locke came to get them, and I feel like he had a mustache twirling moment.
He was gonna rape Mira.
Yes, you're talking about Baron Gorman, right? The guy with the knives that Jon fights?
Yes, I'm telling you.
I didn't think that he had,
yes.
I'm gonna believe you.
He was gonna rape Mira, so Jojen was like, had to step in. Then Locke comes in and takes Bran. And that's where, like, Bran's like, as he's walking away, all of a sudden, walks into Hodor, and Hodor, like, runs up to him and kills him.
Kills Locke.
Kills Locke.
Carl Tanner.
It was Carl.
Tanner, yeah.
You know who might be the worst actor on the show, just really thinking about this? It really might be Heisen getting Hempstead right. He's like, screaming. Like, the way he was screaming, stop it! You can't do it! Yeah. He was so bad.
I mean, I cut him some slack just because he's like a kid and he's just like growing like weird. But
it was so bad.
It didn't work out good. They should have adjusted production around how odd and just off his purity was.
But can we see Jon?
Jon's party kills all the mutineers.
Yeah, the mutineers.
Now, you had spoken to Jon's fight with Carl Tanner before.
I hated it.
You didn't like it?
Didn't like it. Again, like, making it like...
Because Jon almost loses.
Yeah, like, he needs, like, this girl to get in there to get, like, with a staff in the back to get, like, dude, come on. You're eventually pumping this guy up to be a great warrior, and he's having a hard guy with...
Two knives, yeah.
Carl Tanner.
Yeah. And I get, like he's the boss. That's the boss level, but, like, not to make it... Just have Jon beat him. Like, what's a big deal? How does that, you know... In Marine, Jorah informs...
You're missing the best part of this episode. You're part of the best part of this episode. They're like, Locke said there was 11. There's only 10. Where's Rost? And then Rost is running. Yeah,
right.
Stops. See, there's no ghost.
Yeah.
And then next, you know, ghost gets him.
Yeah.
And then ghost meets up with Jon, which is a lot different books.
Right. But it's okay.
It's the same thing, you know.
The only thing I liked about the way Ghost met up with John in the books is
he
comes at the right time.
When he turns around, like, it's described like there's a white figure, like, you're like...
The White Walker.
The White Walker. Yeah. Dude, he doesn't have wall call. He doesn't have any sword, like... Yeah. And, like, next you know, it's Ghost. It's such a happy moment.
Yeah, and he's wrestling with the decision because Stannis had just told him he could be his Warden of the North, Lord Stark of... John Stark of Winterfell, and it's like, it's always what I always wanted. And then he sees Ghost, and it's like...
No, isn't that...
Pretty sure, bro.
No, I'm telling you. No.
Which part is it, then?
This is when he comes out when he's meeting with Mance. And they get swarmed in, because then Stannis' army comes in. They don't know what it is at first. And right before all this stuff is happy, he sees Ghost, and then Stannis' army comes in.
All right, we're gonna check that out. We'll check that out later on. But it's still a lot better in the books. It's more meaningful. I mean, they just don't... We've said it before. They don't do a good job with the direwolves.
No.
They don't understand the relationship with the direwolves.
Right, especially when John says goodbye to Ghost, because you know, like, he thinks Ghost is dead.
He gets some inner strength from Ghost coming back. Of all the direwolf Stark relationships, it's John and Ghost that is the strongest one, the most important one. And it's fun that Benioff and Weiss want that relationship to not be as important, to not focus so much time on direwolves. It's okay. But then why include them at all? I guess you have to. I don't know.
So Danny back in Marine.
Danny Marine, Jorah informs her about the fallback to slavery of Astapor and Yunkai. Danny decides to postpone her invasion of Westeros to bring order to Slaver's Bay and pronounces herself queen. I think this episode, simply because of the action, you got Cressor's Keep, the reveal of Littlefinger and Lysa Arryn killing Jon Arryn, Arya and the Hound stuff is always good. Brienne and Podrick's relationship is a little fleshed out. Not a big fan of the Cersei stuff in this episode, but overall, I'm gonna go 7.75 for first of his name. John?
8.25.
Wow. Because you love the ghost stuff.
The ghost stuff. The ghost stuff. That
fair enough.
Gives it a full point.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
It's a full point right there. Yeah.
And this is like the best ghost stuff that you get the entire series, really.
Well, then, no, actually, episode 9 also get.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, that's like, you know, and we'll get to, it's like, you know, I need him more than I need you. It's like, yes, ghost. It's like, dude, he kills one guy.
Right.
Yeah. One guy. You just need him for one guy.
You really need him to kill that guy.
And it wasn't even a guy like that was gonna, like, you know, come up from behind John and kill John, and all of a sudden, you know, like, it was like just some guy off in left field.
Episode 6 is titled The Laws of Gods and Men, directed by Alec Sakharov. Was he a director of season 6? Alec Sakharov? No, I'm thinking, Sandheim or?
I have no idea.
Yeah. But written by Brian Cogman, who is pretty much part of the writer's room for Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
In Essos, Davos manages to convince the Iron Bank to back Stannis, while also resecuring Salador San and his pirates to Stannis' cause. In Meereen, Daenerys attempts to take on her new role as queen as she listens to the requests of her subjects, including your boy, Hisdar Zolorak, and a man whose goats were killed by Daenerys' increasingly uncontrollable dragons. At the Dreadfort, Yara leads an attack in an effort to rescue Theon, who refuses to come with her, forcing her to escape.
This is what we were talking about. I confused it last.
Right.
This is the scene where just maybe the worst written, directed, thought up scene. It just was not good.
No.
I don't know what happened there, actually.
I mean, it does show you how dangerous Ramsay is in a fight. It does keep Yara like, in the just narrative. That cut, but other
it's
than
just
that,
like, you know, they're like right there marching. And next you know, they're from like the freaking top.
It looked like they just like jumped out
the window.
Top
story. Like, yeah. So they're right there in the sand by the ship. It's like, what?
Quick, use the Ironborn grappling guns. Ramsay rewards Theon for being obedient. And in order to take Moat Cailin, he tasks him to pretend to be Theon instead of Reek. In King's Landing, Tywin puts a bounty on the Hound's Head and instructs Varys to continue spying on Daenerys. Later that day, Tyrion is brought to trial for Joffrey's murder. All of the witnesses brought in testify against him, including Ser Meryn Trant, Grand Maester Pycelle, Cersei, Varys, and to Tyrion's shock, Shae. Angry, humiliated, and defeated, Tyrion demands a trial by combat. And this is a setup episode, without a doubt. I thought that the Iron Bank didn't back Davos, but I guess they do, and he just is able to rehire Salador San, who we see in this episode, but I feel like we don't see him anymore after that.
I think that's it. He's in that bad scene or something.
Right. So, I mean, that's, you know, told him in time. Daenerys acting as a queen. it's, you know, part of her character growth. Not very exciting, but
is this if I'm not mistaken, but then again, who knows? Can't keep up with what season she says these dumb, like, uninspiring lines. I'm a queen. I will rule.
A lot of the same kind of dialogue, written in different ways, twisted around. Her and Jorah, they have for like 4 years now. I think my high point for this episode was Tyrion's trial.
Very good trial. It was very.
And him demanding a trial by combat at the end. It was a good end to a otherwise, not stale episode, but otherwise ho-hum, you know, setup episode. And we know it's a setup episode because we know that even if it's not the next episode, but we know that we end the season with a bang then. So I'm going to go lower on this episode, but I'm not going to go as low as if this episode was in season 2 or 3. I think I'm going to go 6.75. Hey, John, we've definitely taken advantage of the quarter increments.
Yeah, I'm going 6.75 also. We have to keep the quarter increments going.
Mm-hmm. Episode 7 is Mockingbird. Directed by Alex Sakharov, written by Benioff and Weiss. Cersei appoints the Mountain as her champion in the upcoming Trial by Combat, and we are introduced to the latest actor to play the Mountain.
This is his first introduction in the season, when he's out there just killing people.
Right.
Which I thought was just so dumb. You're overdoing it right now. That was an overdone moment.
You're the queen, but like you can't really do that. I mean, I guess you can. Jaime and Bronn refuse to fight for Tyrion. But Oberyn says he'll fight for Tyrion.
I'll be your champion.
Because he wants a chance to avenge Ilya by killing the Mountain, who,
yeah,
as far as he knows, raped and killed his sister Ilya during the rebellion. Daenerys has sex with Daario before sending him off on a mission to deal with the resurgent slayers at Yunkai. Melisandre and Selyse prepare for their departure from Dragonstone, intending to take Shireen as well. Alistair Thorne rejects Jon's offer to seal the tunnel. Brienne and Podrick meet Hot Pie and learn of Arya's adventures. They resolve to travel to the Vale, deducing she would go there in search of living relatives. In the Vale, Lysa is enraged when she witnesses Littlefinger kissing Sansa. She threatens to push Sansa through the moon door, but Littlefinger intervenes and pushes Lysa to her death. Better. Didn't like the Mountain stuff. I like the Mountain. I like that actor, but not really.
I don't like it.
It just doesn't fit. He's not older than Sandor.
Why? It's so obvious. You think they could have, like, got a little makeup on or something, roughed them up a little
bit.
Like some gray in there.
Prosthetics.
Again, another situation where, although it was just a goon, it's, like, so obvious now. Like, I'll admit, when I first saw the first two seasons of Game of Thrones, I didn't really know who the Mountain was. Like, I didn't even realize that was a different actor. Watching him different times, like, it's a different actor.
Yeah. I don't even consider the second one the Mountain.
Yeah, I just figured some goon, like Lannister goon.
Yeah.
You know? And
Lannister Gork.
Yeah, exactly. And just now, it's just like, it's so obvious it's a different guy. Like, you didn't even try. There was no effort. I guess they just said, hey.
The Mountain wasn't used at all in season 3, right?
No. Not that I remember. Because there probably been a different mountain too. Four different mountains.
Well, at least we're sticking with this one now. Granted, you can't see his face anymore.
But, I'm telling you,
the first season mountain.
Or Brassian's face.
How could it be? His face would be like decomposed by this point.
Qyburn knows everything.
Yeah, I guess. What'd you think of the Lysa scene at the end?
Anytime a Tully dies, I collapse.
An angel gets his wing. Anytime a Tully is killed, an angel gets its wings. Brienne and Podrick, hot on the track of Arya. Didn't like the Melisandre Selyse stuff. Didn't really care about the Daenerys Daario stuff, except it just kind of sums up their relationship. Better. I think it's better than the Loss of Gods of Men. I'm not going to go above 7.5. I think I'm going to go 7.25.
All right. I'm going to go 7.5.
Okay.
I'll be your champion. This gives that extra quarter point.
All right.
That hot whole entire ending scene.
And plus, the Tully dies. So.
Actually, you know what? This. It's a 10.
The Mountain and the Viper, directed by Alex Graves, written by Benioff and Weiss. The Wildlings attack Molestown. Gilly is discovered by Ygritte, who spares her. Ramsay forces Theon to get the Ironborn to surrender to Caelyn. The Ironborn surrender in hopes of returning home, but are flayed and slaughtered by Ramsay. As a reward for securing Moat Caelyn, Roose legitimizes Ramsay as a Bolton. In the Vale, Sansa reveals to a council investigating Lysa's death her true identity and convinces the council of Littlefinger's innocence. While Littlefinger starts grooming Robin Arryn, Lysa's son,
as the Lord of the Vale, the Hound and Arya arrive and are informed of Lysa's death. And this is where Arya starts laughing.
Right, right.
So no matter where she goes, her family's dead. King's Landing, the trial by combat starts, and this pretty much takes up, well, not the rest of the episode, because we have a scene with Dany, but it's a great fight, great ending, nice shock ending. And the episode ends, Essos, Barristan Selmy receives a letter intended for Jorah that pardons him as a reward for spying on Daenerys, and Daenerys exiles him from Meereen as a result. A lot happens in this episode. I'm going to give it a 9 before we start talking about
really?
It.
Really? Wow.
I'm going to go 9. I can't go higher than a 9. I'm going to go 9. So that fight scene was everything that a trial by combat should be. And Jorah getting exiled, I thought that was a good scene. The Molestown stuff, not so much. Another scene I actually really liked was Roose legitimizing Ramsay as a Bolton.
What do you see here?
When they're looking at
the north.
Yeah. I thought that was a great scene.
And
that's
like freaking sad. Like when I saw that, that's like official, like, I gotta watch Battle of Bastards again now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it an 8.5.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was really good. I'm not sure if it was 9 good.
Fair enough. The Neil Marshall directed The Watchers on the Wall. Written by Benioff and Weiss.
Strictly all wall action.
All wall action. This is a callback then to the...
Blackwater,
which was all King's Landing.
Neil Marshall also, right?
And that was Neil Marshall also, yes. Yep. Which is why they got him for this. They wanted this to be, you know, one of those big battles. And, I mean, it is definitely different. But each of those big battles is different. This one, I feel like, was the flashiest, I think. Because even Battle of the Bastards...
Well, they definitely did a lot of stuff with the cameras, too. Like, you know, there was, like, that couple of scenes, like, that one scene where they were following Tormund around, like, and he's, you know, he's killing this guy, killing that guy.
Right.
Like, this way they were just doing the camera angle of him, that kind of stuff. Kind of, like, funny seeing Janice Slint being the coward that he was, that he is, going into the, to the room where Gilly is with the baby and hiding out.
Alistair Thorne gets some hero moments.
I didn't like that. That's what they ended up, like, why
they... I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually, because it reminds you that they're, before anything else, they're brothers.
That's true, but
and Alistair Thorne, he's not a bad guy. You know, he doesn't like John, whatever his reason is. Just because he doesn't like John doesn't mean he's a bad guy. He loves the Watch first and foremost, and he's one of the few people that do love the Watch. So I'm okay with that. The Night's Watch prepares for the Wilding invasion. Jilly and her son arrive at Castle Black. Sam hides them in an underground room, which is where they end up with
Janice Slynn.
Wildlings attack from both sides. And do we get the biggest fire the North has ever seen? That was this episode that we get.
Yeah, where they fire. I don't know.
Tormund's army gets through from the south and engages the Night's Watch. One giant manages to break through the tunnel leading into Castle Black, but is killed by Gran and 5 others at the cost of their own lives. That was sad. And I didn't expect it. Alistair Thorne goes to fight in the southern part, leaving Janice Slint in charge. Slint proves to be incompetent and is tricked into going down to the main level, effectively leaving Jon in charge. Jon kills Styr. They have like a little final battle thing.
Right.
Ygritte prepares to kill Jon, but is shot by Ollie. We were introduced to this season. He was in one of those villages.
Yeah, the parents got killed, I guess, eaten alive by
Styr.
Yeah. When Jon is holding Ygritte, if you notice in the back, one side of Ygritte's side, you have like a fire going. And the other side is like it's a cold.
Really?
Yeah, the color. It's like fire and ice.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Kissed by fire. What do you think of Ygritte?
Well, in terms of what?
Character.
I'm in love with her. I don't love her hair.
I liked her more in the books. TV show I felt like put too much emphasis on her, but they had to. I don't think that I liked the actress too much that played her.
Rose Leslie?
Yeah.
Kit Harington is still going out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're going out for a while. I heard rumors last year that kid was going out with Emilia Clarke. I'm like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, please no.
But, yeah, no, they're
please
still,
don't do it.
They're still going out. And that, too, though, you know, with the ghost scene and going back
to that. Ghost scene's real good, yeah.
I just, like, Sam's like, you can't protect me forever. I'm going to die.
Yeah. How do you rate this episode? Do you rate this among season 4 episodes, or do you rate this among the big battle episodes? Because among the big battle episodes, I think on a rewatch, I think I like it better than Blackwater, but not as much as Battle of the Bastards.
Right.
Maybe not even as much as Hardhome. But the idea behind this episode just takes place at Castle Black, one big battle. I really like that. I remember it didn't quite meet my expectations, but I did like it the first time I saw it. And on a rewatch, it stands. It does stand. And, you know, Neil Marshall's, he's a veteran director. He's directed movies. Yeah, he's been around quite a few times. The ghost stuff was great. There were little surprises in this episode. A lot of the characters got a moment to shine. Gren and Pip, that was sad. I'm going to go 8.75.
I'm going to go 8.50.
I think the only reason I'm going 8.75 is because I don't want to rate it lower than Two Swords. I'm going to start it off too high. Otherwise, I think it's more of an 8.5, but I think this is the moment when Jon Snow becomes...
the protagonist.
Yeah, he becomes the main guy. He knew he was going to get out of this, but you know, from here, the main narrative of Game of Thrones, he feels adaptation of the Song of Ice and Fire, it starts to revolve around him because now Stannis arrives.
And then, like, that scene in the next episode, Sansa
arrives. You know, people start arriving here. You know, he gets killed, he gets raised, Melisandre's there. Things start to revolve around him after this moment. It's not just the existential threat, like we were talking about the characters, of the wall and what's beyond it. In a way, it's a coming out party for Jon Snow. Season finale for season 4, directed by Alex Graves, written by Benioff and Weiss, titled The Children. Were you disappointed by The Children? The way they looked, the way they acted?
Well, they did change him up. We see him again in season 6.
Yeah.
They changed the look. I don't think I was pretty much indifferent. I don't think I was like, you know, you see like Sarah Booker's like, oh my god, this is such a disappointment. I don't know if I can really watch this. I think it's great. It wasn't like that. Yeah, well, I might not have been overall happy, but I think they looked a little, I don't know. A little more alienish.
Yeah.
In the books, I think.
I didn't like the whole Dungeons and Dragons vibe when Bran comes upon the, whatever the fuck he's called, the hill, the tree, the cave, whatever. Mm-hmm.
But George, the guy just has this little story. He's like,
George is such a weakling, right?
Yeah.
He can't do anything. Bran has a better chance in a sword fight than Jojen. But on the rewatch, I was okay with it. You know, I'm good with it, introducing that element. Jon's negotiation with Mance Rayder is interrupted when Stannis and his army overrun the Wilding camp, taking Mance's prisoner on Jon's suggestion. Yeah.
Awesome scene.
Mm-hmm. Probably the best Stannis scene we've gotten since season 2. Easily the best Stannis scene we've gotten since season 2. Bran's party comes upon the large heart tree from his visions, but they're attacked by skeletal beasts who kill Jojen. The others are saved by the children, and they take them to the Three-Eyed Raven, who's revealed to be an old man, the guy that acted this part and did not like. In the Vale, Brienne and Podrick come across Arya and the Hound. When Brienne engages and critically wounds, he begs Arya to kill him, but she refuses and leaves with Brienne searching for her. She enters a ship headed to Braavos, intending to reunite with Jaqen H'ghar. At King's Landing, Cersei orders Qyburn to do anything to save the Mountain, who was poisoned by Oberyn's blade. She gets involved with Jaime, who releases Tyrion. Tyrion later finds Shae in Tywin's bed and strangles her to death. He then confronts Tywin in the privy and kills him, escaping the city with Varys. In Meereen, Daenerys is visited by a citizen who brings the charred remains of his daughter, who was burned by Drogon. As a precaution, Daenerys chains her two other dragons in the catacombs. I thought it was a really good episode.
Extremely good episode. The Stannis Jon scene. I liked when Jon, the Night's Watch, are burying, you know, funeral pyre with the Night's Watch. You know, the show finally gives us a hint that Jon is Azor Ahai when Melisandre comes out and he sees the flames and the smoke.
You know what? It's funny. I remember you texting. I remember the night this episode aired. I remember you texting me that. Just that. Just wait till you see Melisandre Azor Ahai. And that's the
third. Yeah, I feel like I said that this is Azor Ahai. The show giving us away that Jon's Azor Ahai.
Yeah. Awesome.
Because they're playing the Lore of Light music while that's happening.
The Bran stuff, like I said before, I didn't like it as much at first, but on a rewatch, I do like it, and I'm glad that Jojen's out of the picture. The Brienne Hound fight scene, I already told you how much I love that. And then the Arya Hound scene when she refuses to kill him. I mean, it's not as good as you get in A Storm of Swords, but it's really good. The Mountain's transformed into Sir Robert Strong. Jaime releases Tyrion. Tyrion kills Shae. Two thumbs up. Confronts Tywin in the privy and kills him. And escapes with Varys. Daenerys has to lock up her dragons, like, whatever. I think they would have been better served putting the Jorah stuff in this episode. And maybe putting this stuff in the last episode, but it doesn't really matter. But everything, it's... instead of a wrap-up episode... it's almost like a crescendo episode. Everything has led up to these moments. The playing field is again changed. After the reigns of Castamere, the playing field is anew. And again, we have new people in powerful places, new relationships, new adversaries, new journeys. You get all that in this episode. You also get a lot of meat. And I think for me, that Brienne Hound scene, I think I'm going to go 9.25. I am. I'm going to go 9.25. I'm going to rate The Children as the highest of the season.
I'm going to 9. This is my highest ranking.
All right. Cool.
the way my scores went, it'd be a lot higher than this on average. But I have a 7.9 average for the season.
For season 4?
Yeah.
You're a tough critic.
Last three ones are 8.5, 8.5, and 9. I just thought that would be...
Well, you had a couple sixes in there.
A couple sixes.
See, I had 1 6. I had 6.75.
Where is the thing we scored season 1?
I don't know, dude.
Yeah, you should be fired.
Yeah, I know. I promise, I'll listen back to the episode. I'll get the scores before we're done with all this so we can, like, compare everything.
How can you say you like season 1 better than season 4 when you had season 4 ranked?
Yeah, I know, right?
0.5. We gotta go back and re-rank season 1.
Yeah, the review of the rewatch changes as it goes along.
Standards are straight. Yeah, yeah. We're just giving out 8s.
Yeah. Skip the whole thing. Just give everybody an 8.
I do like season 5, but I do think, just for a spoiler, I do think there'll be some lesser scores in season 5, though. I'm not going to get as many. 6 of the 10 episodes I had ranked 8 or higher. I don't think that's happened in season 5.
No, yeah.
I'll get like 3 or 4 of them. Maybe. There's definitely going to be a couple, I think, like 6.5ers in there.
But I think the thing is, the show changes from season 3 to season 4, and then even more so from season 4 to season 5, because I think that the gloves are off for Benioff and Weiss, so to speak. They're not shackled as much to the hip to George R. R. Martin, so I think that while individual episodes may be better in season 4, characters, overall story arcs of the season, writing, I think all that stuff is better in season 5. Speaking just to season 4, being that, you know, this is the season 4 episode, Game of Thrones needed this. I think if they had another ho-hum season, they didn't have that big event episode like Reigns of Castamere or Blackwater to make up for
fillers.
Yeah. They didn't have that this season. So, but what they did have to their advantage is they had quite a few events that weren't near the level of the Red Wedding or Blackwater, but were big enough where they could build around those and place them at certain points in the season, which is what they did. This is the best produced season. This is so far. This is the best produced season. Season 1 is probably still the best written season as far as characters. But considering that they are adapting, but they're just adapting now, just broad strokes. I think season 4 is pretty close up there with season 1. I probably have the episodes rated higher for season 4 than season 1, but season 1 works better as a self-contained season. Right. Season 2 and season 3 kind of bleed into each other, but season 1 is self-contained, almost like a self-contained story. Season 4 is also, Bran started his journey in season 3, I'd Raven, but he just traveled with Jojen, Mira, and Hodor for all season 4 and got to where he was going. And wisely, he's taken out of the production for a year. The self-destruction of House Lannister is an overall narrative for season 4. And these were things that were missing in season 2 and season 3. I said before that self-destruction of House Stark was a big part of season 3, and it was, but it wasn't shown as well as the self-destruction of House Lannister this season. Shay was used to a minimum, which was great. It feels like Benioff and Weiss kind of looked at what they had done so far and reassessed what they were doing, where they were going, how they were approaching this material and how they were making this show, and took a different approach. And it fits a lot better. Less trying to hit George Martin minor points, trying to keep with the major timeline, the major storyline, the major incidents that happen in A Song of Ice and Fire, and instead treating these television characters as different from their book counterparts, because they are. A lot of these characters are different from their book counterparts, so they have different strengths, different weaknesses. So the relationships between them are not going to be the same as they were in the source material. And Benioff and Weiss, I think, really embraced that in season 4. And that's why I think that season 4 is far superior than season 2, far superior than season 3. I remember the first time it aired, I wasn't disappointed. And it was the first time that I wasn't disappointed. I also thought it was kind of middle of the road. On the rewatch, I like it a lot better. It stands real well.
I think overall it's a very good season.
Yeah.
And I think
argument could be made it's the best, but
right.
Season 1 is just too Sean Bean.
Right. So I think what you said in the beginning, where it kind of like resets itself, you do kind of see, okay, well, there's no more Edward, there's no more Rob. What is it about?
Right.
You start seeing John.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing John fight against the mutineers.
Right.
He's
taking on a leadership role.
Yeah. With
John. They didn't do a good job with him as G.R. Mormont's squire. Not adapting anything. Like, they didn't show him learning anything. They had that one scene at Craster's Keep where he yelled at him and said, if you want to leave,
yeah,
you
know, which is a good line. There wasn't enough of it
for him to learn, but he did, because now he's becoming a leader. And you could say it has nothing to do with him being a squire for Jorah Mormont. You could say it has all to do with his upbringing at Winterfell, learning all this from Ned. That's fine. Whatever it is, he does become a leader, and it's like really enjoyable, especially knowing where his character goes. Season 4 is a coming out party for television, Jon Snow, at least. He has room to breathe. That character has room to breathe, and automatically the audience is more invested in him because their attention is taken away from Rob. He's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. So he's no longer competing with his brother. One thing they do a better job with, and I don't know if this is so much to season 4 or season 5, but making a antagonist, so to speak, out of Cersei. When I read A Feast for Crows, I just find Cersei just to be like, she thinks she's like Tywin, mm-hmm. but really she's just making mistake after mistake. Whereas in Game of Thrones, Cersei is a bona fide villain.
I think it's probably more in season 5 where they really...
Right.
You know,
with her feud with Margaery. And it's awesome. It's great. After Storm of Swords, with no more Joffrey, with no more Tywin, you're like, well, who's Daenerys going to fight against? Who's the bad guy here? But you don't sense that at all in Game of Thrones. You miss Tywin. The presence of Tywin. Charles Dance did a great job with that role, but I think it speaks more to how good Lena Headey is and how easy she is to write for as an actress, and how they bring that character of Cersei up an echelon from the character she is in A Song of Ice and Fire, to the point where if George Martin ever gets a book out, he may base some decisions he makes with that character off of what Benioff and Weiss are doing with Lena Headey and Cersei. At the end of season 4, I'm not like, alright, well, who's the bad guy now? I know that Cersei, I know what she does in Feast for Crows, but I know that Cersei's not going to make a bumbling mistake after bumbling mistake. Like, she's, as you saw in The Winds of Winter, she always has a trump card. Going back to her conversation with Ned in the Godswood, she always has a trump card. She's always thinking that many steps ahead. She's not going to be underestimated. She shouldn't be underestimated. Don't underestimate her. She's got all the angles covered. While it's the coming out party for Jon Snow, I think the same can almost be said for Cersei Lannister going to season 5. With Robb's death, it cleared the way for Jon Snow. With Tywin's death, with Tyrion leaving King's Landing, it kind of clears the way for Lena Headey, for Cersei character, to step up a notch and become one of the... I mean, she was one of the main cast members, but to become an Emmy-nominated character. Anyway, what else you got with season 4? Anything to say for the epilogue?
Obviously, until we see the first, we see Bran's visions. Do we see Bran's visions?
Which
goes in the Heart Tree. You see the dragon flying over.
Oh, right, right. And that was in The Children.
That was in The Children. And we see the throne room again. We see, like, other things, like, you know.
You didn't see people, though, right? You saw.
Did he see Ned dying? Or was that, I'm getting confused, season 6.
Right, season 6, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't much, but you saw those little clothes of the dragon. You saw, I think you saw the Knights King through the thing. You saw when he took the baby.
Well, that had already happened, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say he's only looking at the future, but you know, he's looking present also.
Right.
But obviously not yet learned to look into the past. He has no control over his power. And we won't see any of that in season 5 because mercifully, Isaac Hempstead Wright is given a year off. Oh, man. But the children were like, I thought like a green seer was coming. There's just like some lesbian, some disabled lesbian lady out there with a bad haircut. Like, no, that's him. Oh my God, they're like, that's a guy? All right, come on, let's save him.
Is it Bran or is it Brandy?
Is it Bran or is it Brandy going by Bran? Anyway, all right. Sorry, Isaac Hempstead, right? Yeah, you did great in season 6. Well, you had a nice haircut. Definitely looked better. All right. We'll speak with you guys next time. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you later. Bum, 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 bum